And now, the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Tolsma, Adam Bennett, and Mike Arnold.
What's up, everybody? It is episode 3 of the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. Adam Bennett and Mike Arnold with you this week. Our third co-host, Mike Tolsma, is out of the lineup this week. He had to take a week off, moving into a new house in Buffalo, so we congratulate him for that. And he's actually doing that right now as we're recording. However, Mike Arnold, we have a happy podcast for the first time in the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast series. The Browns had a 33-30 victory at Baltimore in overtime, a huge win. And Mike, you know, everything that we kind of have come to expect about the Browns here, not only this year but in years past, all of the terrible ways to lose that they've found over the years, they put that all behind them at least for one game, and obviously it is just one game, but they get a huge, giant win in a place that they almost never win. And they made plays in the clutch to get the victory. So I guess my question to you, Mike, is twofold. Number one, are you surprised with it? And number two, can they sustain this kind of success?
I'm not going to say I wasn't surprised. I mean, we haven't won in Baltimore since 2007. This isn't the Ray Lewis-led defense anymore. It's not like they're crazy like they were in the past. But it was good to see. I mean, Josh McCown set the single-game record. We held, quote-unquote, elite Joe Flacco to 210 yards passing and only one touchdown. We didn't turn the ball over another week, which is, you know, something we haven't done. We've always struggled with in the past. And, I mean, I'm happy. I don't know if we can sustain it going forward. I mean, we're playing, coming up, we have Denver, St. Louis, Arizona, and Cincinnati our next four games. And I really think Cincinnati is one of the best teams in the league. Andy Dalton showed something this week. You know, he beat Seattle, which was the least Andy Dalton thing I think I've seen in a while.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we, and we'll have a lot of time to talk the Browns game on this podcast, but just from a long-term perspective here, you know, Mike Pettine, first of all, I'm going to give him a lot of credit because I've been hammering him over the last few weeks. If you've listened to these podcasts before, or if you read our articles at hardfoulsports.com, and he doesn't care if somebody like me hammers him, but he's really had a tough few weeks, and rightfully so in a lot of regards. But you know what? At the end of the day, he asked us all to trust him that he was making the right decision in starting Josh McCown over Johnny Manziel. And, you know, it's hard as Browns fans, as you know, Mike, you know, how can we ever trust a coach? I mean, since 1999, we've had like a million of them, and they've all told us to trust him. Mike Holmgren said, you know, don't call him for playoff tickets and was guaranteeing great things. And, you know, we've had a lot of people ask us to trust them. And so it's natural that we don't trust those people. And Mike Pettine, though, made the right call. And I'm man enough to admit that I was wrong. I was beating my fist against the table saying, this is stupid. You need to start Johnny Manziel. What are you getting out of Josh McCown? But Josh McCown, over the last two games and parts of the Oakland game, has looked like Peyton Manning in his prime. I mean, he's been flawless. That game on Sunday was flawless in Baltimore. He didn't turn the ball over. He made phenomenal throws. He made great reads. He stepped out of the pocket when he needed to. He used his legs. He changed the offense when he needed to. And they asked him to throw it almost 50 times, or more than 50 times, and he won us the game with his arms. So if you have a quarterback on your roster that can do that, you automatically have to play that guy, regardless of what kind of promise you have on the bench behind him. And, you know, I know you were kind of in the camp, Mike, that I think you kind of wanted Johnny, and, you know, but you were okay with McCown playing. I was dead set against it, and I was dead wrong, and I'm glad that I was dead wrong. I don't know how long he can sustain this, but my goodness, for the last 2 weeks, it's looked really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Johnny's our future. I just think he needs time to develop. But, I mean, McCown just set the single-game record for regular season passing and a three-game record the last 3 weeks, where he's thrown over 350 the 2 weeks before this, and then 457 this week, which, I mean, if you told anyone earlier in the year, they would have laughed at you that Josh McCown would be doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, the funny part is, I mean, Mike Pettine, I mean, listen, I did not take him seriously when he said, you know, this guy can win us games with his arm. And he had that, McCown had that good stretch in Chicago where you're thinking, okay, well, you know, he can put some decent football together on tape. But, I mean, he was like, you know, 5-14 in his last 19 games before starting for Cleveland. He doesn't have a track record of success. He's 36 years old. 7 different teams in the National Football League. He was out of the league for a while. And, you know, it's not like he's come in and managed the games for us. He's dominating games. I mean, that was a dominant performance in Baltimore on Sunday. And if you can continue to get that type of performance, then you've got a chance to be in every single game, even if the defense plays poorly, which we'll talk more about that in a minute. So I just... You know what, as much as we have hammered against Mike Pettine in a lot of regards, I've got to give him a lot of credit because he made the right call, and this is Josh McCown's team now until he proves otherwise, and let's hope he can sustain it.
Mm-hmm. The two things I liked were, one, McCown threw passes to 9 different receivers. The 9 receivers had receptions, which is great that he can spread the ball out, especially when we're kind of lacking in the playmaker department, even though Barnage has really been impressing me these last couple weeks.
Oh, no question.
And two, Mike Pettine showed emotion. Like, when was the last time you saw that?
It's been a long time, Mike. It's been a long, long time. And that, it's weird because there's a Vine or a, you know, an Instagram or however they capture that video of him at the end of the game, just kind of letting it all out when we won. And if you watch that Vine closely, and I've retweeted it on our timeline at HFS Cleveland, it almost looks like he's yelling so loud that the camera, which is way up on the other side of the stadium, is shaking. Like, that's how much emotion is coming out of Mike Pettine. And, you know, he told reporters this week, he said, look, I'm really laid back, you know, two reporters in the media room, but I'm not laid back as a coach, or I wouldn't classify myself as a laid back coach. And I really, again, I challenged him on that because I've sat behind that sideline 2 or 3 times now, and you just don't really see him do much. So you're right. I mean, that's good to see. But I think what confuses me, and I don't know if it's the same for you, Mike, is I don't know how much value to place on a win like this, because this team was built from the GM to the head coach to the coaching staff on down to be a run first, stop the run mentality kind of team. And, you know, this win is great, but this win was absolutely nothing like what we were built to do. And so that's, I think, why everybody kind of has that uneasy feeling, other than, of course, this is the Browns, and we always have an uneasy feeling. But,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if a team that's not built to win games through kind of this gun it 50 times, you know, throw the ball up and down the field and play in shootouts with teams, can they sustain that? You know, probably not. I mean, Josh McCown isn't going to throw for 300, 400 yards a game every game for the rest of the year. That's not going to happen. And then, so if it doesn't, the problems still remain. I mean, we gave up 180 yards on the ground to Baltimore. And our defense, again, looked like total garbage at times. Although, to its credit, it got some huge stops. That stop at the beginning of overtime, that 3-and-out was phenomenal. And really, they got a stop at the end of the game, that game-tying drive for the Ravens. They got bailed out, Baltimore did, with just a terrible call on Kaywan Williams at the end of the game there. But again, you know, our defense, which is, you know, again, quote-unquote elite, looked like trash. We absolutely can't run the ball, but that's okay, because if you can continue to utilize Duke Johnson and Crowell in the passing game, it's kind of like running it anyway. But yeah. I just don't, and I want to get your thoughts. Can we sustain this kind of throw the ball 50 times, score 30 points, and play in a shootout style of play that we're seeing?
The one thing I really liked from our defense, and when you look at our secondary, they have a lot of accolades. They're all Pro Bowlers at least once in their career. And again, like I made fun of earlier with Joe Flacco, is he elite? You know, he's still a top 10 quarterback. He threw for 210 yards against us.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I mean, granted, they didn't force any turnovers. There was one, I think, Hayden, if his finger was healthy, I think he would have had.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I look at. We go through stretches where we'll have three or four series in the game where we look like the best defense in the league. We look like Seattle's defense, although I don't know how much longer we can start calling Seattle's defense, you know, the best defense in the league, because Cincinnati just kind of torched them the other day. But I don't, you know, we have these series where we look great, okay, and then we have a play where we give up like 80 yards. And I don't know if that, to me, that says it's more scheme than anything else, because, you know, there are huge holes and huge gashes in the defense. And here's what I'll bring up to you. I give Mike Pettine and John DeFilippo a ton of credit on the offensive side of the ball, because I'm a big believer that as a coach, you have to do whatever it takes that week to win, right? So, you know, last week we threw the ball 50 times, or yesterday we threw the ball 50 times, okay? And they're going to catch some heat for that, and they're going to have people say that, okay, they can't run the ball and they don't have a good enough run game. They threw it 50 times because Baltimore was daring Josh McCown to beat them, and he did. I mean, he set a single game franchise record for passing, but Baltimore continued to dare him to beat them. They thought he's going to make a mistake, and he never did, and Mike Pettine allowed that type of game plan to take place and to get us a win, whereas if he was too stubborn on that side of the ball, he could have just said, hey, listen, I don't care if we're getting stopped every time, run it 30 times, you know, try to have balance. So I give him credit in that regard, but defensively, the type of flexibility that he has on offense isn't showing up at all, because they need to find some kind of ripple in their scheme or go to a different scheme that prevents the big play. And I'm not saying get less aggressive, but I am saying try to change it up a little bit so you're not giving up 40, 50, 60, 70-yard gashes of your defense. And I don't see that same, and I could be wrong. I mean, you played college football, Mike. Are you seeing that kind of flexibility on the defensive side of the ball?
I'm not really an expert on the defensive side, but the one thing that comes that I really think of is I feel like all of the money we've spent on our defense has gone into, you know, pass rushers or guys in the secondary. You know, we spent a first-round pick on Shelton, who, even though he hasn't been playing well, I still like the pick. I think he's going to be successful going forward once he has more experience and more time to develop. But, you know, there's no one really else in our run game that you can say we spent a lot of money to bring them here specifically to get a good run defense. Yeah. A lot of it's pass rush, and, you know, you got Tashawn Gibson, who, even though he's been dealing with injuries this year, he's a Pro Bowler. Joe Hayden, who I'm not as high as everyone else on, he's a Pro Bowler. Hittner's, I mean, you know, we brought him in for the reason that we thought he was going to be able to help us. And granted, he gets beat on crossing routes a lot and to a point where it really annoys me, but our money goes to secondary and pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dante was brought in to be a run-stopping strong safety and hasn't even been close to that. And he's awful in pass coverage. Really always has been, dating back to his days in Buffalo. But, you know, the thing that concerns me on that side of the ball, I haven't seen development defensively under Pettine. I mean, Paul Kruger, who was signed by Joe Banner, the first big Joe Banner signing to be this elite pass rusher, he really hasn't been. I mean, they made him change positions, and they're dropping him back more in coverage now because he's not getting to the quarterback. Barkevious Mingo, who, you know, we can argue about Mingo all day. I think that was a terrible pick by Banner and Lombardi. Mingo, he cannot stop.
You didn't select D. Milner.
Yeah, and Mingo can't stop the run. A liability in the run game, and he's not getting to the quarterback. I mean, I do think that they spent money on Carlos Dansby, and they thought that he'd shore up the middle, but, you know, his counterpart, whether it's Kirksey or Craig Robertson, they're not doing anything to stop the run. So yeah. You're right in that a lot of money's been spent, you know, in other areas, but there's no development. Like, I'm not seeing guys get better on defense under Mike Pettine, which really, if you're a defensive head coach, that's kind of how you make your living, is to get guys better on your side of the ball. But on the same token, I am seeing guys get a lot better on offense, and now 2 years in a row, and we're only talking about one game this year, the win against Baltimore, but even in that San Diego loss and parts of the Oakland game and the Tennessee game, the Browns are maximizing a lot of production out of guys that on paper don't have that kind of talent. So I guess Pettine gets credit for that. But on the defensive side of the ball, there's really, I don't see that kind of maturation of the progression. So, that leads us kind of into this topic of, Mike, do you think it's time for all of us to accept that really now for the duration of the year, this defense as a whole is going to be one of the worst in the league, or is there still hope that it can somehow get over the hump and start playing a lot better?
I'm more optimistic going forward. I think that we've been doing a good job shutting quarterback or shutting the passing game down for teams, and we've played against some decent offenses so far. We've gone against a good quarterback in Joe Flacco, a good quarterback in Joe or Philip Rivers, who we were in at the end of the game against. We're going against offenses who, Peyton Manning isn't the Peyton Manning of old. He's lost the ability to throw the ball the way he has in the past. Nick Foles hasn't been the answer in St. Louis. Arizona's defense is really what makes them so great. And as you go on, we play a lot of great defenses, and I think offense may be a little bit of a struggle going forward, but I think our defense will continue to play well against the pass, at least, even though it may get torn up against the run.
Well, I think this week is the big test against the run against Denver. Denver averages like, I don't know, 2.8 yards a carry or something ridiculously bad like that. I mean, they've had no run game at all. And so it's kind of one of those worst meets worst matchups where the worst run offense in the NFL meets the worst run defense in the NFL. I mean, if we give up anywhere close to 100 yards or anywhere more than 100 yards against Denver, then this is a problem that is not going to get fixed. Because again, they've been awful in that regard. And I'm sure they'll place an emphasis on it this week, but they do not have a good run blocking offensive line. They've got a lot of young guys on that line, and they're a pass first offense. By the same token, we can't offensively, I just don't see us being able to expect to continue the production that we've had. Can Gary Barnidge continue to be the most productive tight end in the league? I don't know. Can our receivers continue to find wide open spaces, especially when teams play zone? I don't know. Can Josh McCown continue to look like Peyton Manning? I don't know. And so, I'm still kind of banking on the fact that in order to have success, we're going to have to play much, much better defense and play games in the teens and 20s in order to win. But then again, I thought that'd have to be the case against Baltimore. I thought it'd have to be the case against San Diego. And we're finding ourselves in these shootouts where we're throwing it all over the field and we're looking. I mean, this offense hasn't looked better since like the Kelly Holcomb days or that, the 2007 year with Derek Anderson when
That
everybody
year
went
was
to the
it,
Pro
yeah.
Bowl and, we went 10-6. So I just, it's one of those anomalies, and we'll have to see to find out. It's one of the few times that I'm totally dumbfounded about this team. I don't know what to think moving forward.
I could see our run game starting to produce a little more as teams realize that they can't let Josh McCown continually throw all
Well,
over
that's
them. I
true.
mean, he's gone 3 weeks in a row throwing over 50 passes at around a 70% completion percentage for 350, 350, and 450 yards.
Yeah, and if we give Mike Pettine a lot of credit, which we have, John DeFilippo, his name needs to come up more too, because I mean his play calling is some of the most innovative that we've seen here. And I mentioned that last week in San Diego. He really had a good game last week against the Chargers, and this week the utilization of the running backs in the pass game, we haven't had that in a long, long time here. The screen game, the bubble screen game, just smart, efficient play calling that allows McCown to do all the things that you just said. To me, he's been the most impressive thing about this. And I hope, we always talk about new coaches and changing coaches. I hope he's the one guy that we get to have a little bit of time with as our offensive coordinator, because for a guy who's never called plays in the NFL to have a stretch like he's having now, and I understand, the Chargers defense was banged up. The Ravens defense is awful this year. But still, traditionally, we play down to levels of those teams and not up, to a different level. And DeFilippo's getting the job done.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I don't know how eager other teams will be to hire a Browns coordinator to be a head coach.
Oh, no, that's not the case. I mean, my only concern is if Mike Pettine gets fired, maybe there's a way we keep him around. There's a long time to go, and we're just 2-3. And again, we face just a ridiculous schedule moving forward, where there's no easy win. But you know, it's kind of like I said before, and we try to stay guarded in this regard, and specifically me, because I'm an emotional guy, and there are the highs and the lows of being a fan, and we're all invested in this. But you try to take a long-term approach, and I told you after week two, we'd win some games that we shouldn't win, and I think we put last week's game in that category against Baltimore, and we'll lose some games that we shouldn't lose, and we've already done that against Oakland, and you could really argue that Jets game too.
And so, the San Diego game.
Yeah, yeah, right in it at the end. So, you know, are we going to get enough of those wins that we shouldn't have on paper? But also, at what point do we start having the conversation that maybe we are a little bit better on paper than any of us ever thought we were? It's just one of those things. But that'll wrap up our Browns talk, and of course, we talked with Ken Carman about the Browns as well. I want to move to the Cavs, and I know there's genuine interest in the Cavs, and we want to kind of keep on this positive note of the podcast. We're not even going to talk about the real negatives for the Browns. You know, the Cavs start in less than a month, Mike, and I know you and I have been anxious to talk about this and to get the season going. We're dealing with a lot of injuries right now. Kyrie, who knows how long he'll be out. Kevin Love, who knows if he'll be ready for that opening game. I know you and I were talking over the past week. This could be one of those situations, and I want you to expand on this. We could struggle to start the season, and we're not talking about, you know, under 500 as deep as we were in the last year, but there could be legitimate and real struggles at the beginning of the season. Are those struggles going to be cause for concern in your mind?
I don't think they are. And I feel like knowing how Cleveland fans are, they're going to be very concerned. We're going to be missing four of our best seven players, possibly, to start the season. We're going to be, you know, Love will at least be limited. Kyrie's not, there's no way they're going to rush him back with his injury history. Shumpert is missing 3 months. And then Tristan Thompson wants more money. And I mean, I, who knows if they'll have a deal done, but at this point I'm thinking it's going to be the holdout will go into the season. And I think our offense is going to go something like it was in the finals. And I might be the only person in Cleveland who thinks this, but I thought LeBron James had a terrible finals.
Interesting.
Over the six games, do you know how many shots he missed?
Oh, I can imagine it'd be a lot.
118.
Wow.
Yeah. He shot. He had Dion Waiters shooting numbers. I mean, he was shooting below 40% from the field. He was in the worst jump shooting stretch of his career over the entire playoffs. And I could see him just coming into the season very passively. And our bench unit is going to be a lot better than it was last year once we're fully healthy. We had no creation from anyone, and Mo Williams is really going to give them a spark. But, you know, I've watched a couple of the scrimmages so far, and the bench lineup they have right now just have no one who can create offense. I'm a huge Matthew Dellavedova fan, but he's not going to create anything. You know, there were stretches where, again, in the Hawks game, the first one, where the only thing that happened in two pretty long periods of that bench play was Anderson Varejao hitting 18-foot jumpers, which I don't think you want to be the calling card of your offense at any point. I think they're going to struggle going probably maybe the first 15, 20 games, but I think it's going to be good for them in the long run. I think as Love spends more time on the court where he's the number two option, he's going to get more comfortable in the offense and put up, you know, plus 20 points every night, I think. He's more than capable of doing it, too.
Yeah, you know, look, I think from again, taking a long-term approach, first of all, you never want to have guys injured. You always want, you know, especially your best players healthy and available and ready to go. But if you were to give me a time of which they were injured, I would tell you now is the best time because, especially during training camp and preseason, look, Kevin Love's not going to get anything out of training camp. You know, his development within Blatt's offense, that'll happen in the closed-door practices. They're not going to show anything in the preseason in that regard. Kyrie Irving isn't going to get anything out of training camp or preseason. Although
Love is actually, I don't mean to interrupt you, Love has actually done a couple full contact practices now.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, that's where his development is going to take shape. But you know, I enjoy the fact that we get the opportunity in these preseason games to see, you know, deep into our bench, okay, who do we have? How can we play them? This is a huge moment for David Blatt. And, you know, people don't understand it, but, you know, when we're in playoff season and we get into June and it's time for the finals, Blatt is going to look back at these moments from training camp and from preseason and from these first 10 to 15 games when guys are hurt and his bench players have to come in and play significantly. And he'll be able to look back on what they did during these times to craft their roles with his lineups and rotations once we get into the playoffs and beyond. And, you know, there's an element of coaching that, you know, you determine the strengths and weaknesses in the preseason, you determine them early on in the season, and then you utilize those strengths later on. So, you know, David Blatt's never worked with Mo Williams before. He knows what he has and other bench players that are coming back, but you get a great opportunity to see what Andy has right now. And you're right, they will struggle. They'll get into that stagnant, spread it out, pick and roll, ball screen offense, where LeBron just wants to kind of dominate and take over. I don't think he had a bad finals. I think he realized that it had to be in his hands and he was just going to take every shot that he could. But if they use this time to utilize and learn about their bench players, they're going to have so much better depth when it counts. And so, like I said, you never want anybody to be hurt, but if you're going to pick a time for your good players to be hurt, to me, now's the time.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I really hope that's not the case with the offense. Golden State had the number one defense in the NBA last year. No one talks about that because everyone just has to say we were hurt. That's why they won. They were a great team. And during the season, per 100 possessions, they gave up 99 points. The Cavs scored 93 points per 100 possessions in the finals, which is brutal. That's brutal. And I don't know. I just don't want to see what I saw in the playoffs where LeBron gets a point guard switched off onto him and then brings the shot clock down to 2 seconds and shoots a jumper from 1 foot inside the three-point line with, you know, Isaiah Thomas or Jeff Teague on him. And it's just frustrated me to no end watching that, knowing you have arguably the best post-up player and one of the best slashers in the game, you know, just shooting and shooting and shooting.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see now at the beginning of the year. I mean, look, I think you're right. Tristan's holdout will go into the season, which I defended Tristan a couple of weeks ago on this very podcast.
Yeah.
I think the further along in real time it goes in the season, the less inclined I'm going to be to defend him. At some point, you've got to get a deal done. And that's as much on Tristan as it is on the Cavs to do that. But at the same time, you know, I'm interested to see what we have. Can Sasha Kahn play in this pick and roll offense? The answer, I already know the answer to that is no.
No.
But, you know, the preseason, I didn't expect to see any of Blatt's stuff in the preseason, and we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. I'm with you. I really, really hope that passive-aggressive LeBron does not get into this thing where he's going to play coach LeBron on offense, because David Blatt is a good enough coach that he will give LeBron the opportunity to continue being the best player on the planet within his offense while allowing for better looks across the board. And, you know, that Hawks game, I watched the preseason game in Cincinnati against the Hawks, and it was the same kind of spread them out, four out, one in, set a high ball screen, maybe screen away every once in a while, stagnant kind of offense. But I think right now that's more about not showing anything than it is, you know, them going to rely on that throughout the year. Now, I could be totally wrong in that regard, but I'm hoping, just like you are, that we're going to see a lot more creativity, especially with the bench guys out there at the beginning of the season, because it's such a great opportunity for them to increase their roles and now become more in terms of our depth with Iman Shumpert down, Kyrie Irving down, Kevin Love's down, Tristan Thompson's gone. Who knows how long Andy Varejao can stay healthy.
Hopefully they keep him on a tight minutes restriction.
Yeah, he'll be on a pitch count. He'll definitely be on a pitch count. So we'll see with all those things. But I think the overall theme that both of us are getting at is if we struggle, and we will have struggles early on in the year, not to panic, correct?
Exactly. And but what you were saying about LeBron, you know, taking over the offense, you know, people freaked out when they said he was calling plays. That's not what either of us means by that. He's and if he sees something in the defense, by all means, he has the right to call plays. He comes up the floor with the ball. However, I don't want him completely overhauling the Princeton and switching the spread pick and roll because it's no longer 2001 and it doesn't work in the NBA anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if you see a matchup that you can exploit, then by all means, do it. And LeBron has that freedom to do that whenever he wants. But you can't. I think David Blatt realized, especially in the finals last year, that our only chance to win was to have LeBron absolutely 100% go off. You know, for three or four games in a row. And just at that point, it wasn't going to happen. He was going, again, like you said, through one of the worst stretches of shooting that he's ever had in his career. He wasn't getting good looks. But I think Black kind of conceded that offense to LeBron because he realized that was really our only chance. And a lot of times when you look, J.R. Smith, I don't really feel comfortable with J.R. with the ball in his hand in big situations. I don't think Black did either.
I love J.R. as a fourth option in an offense. I don't like JR is the second option of an offense.
Exactly. And that's where kind of that point right there is kind of where we were with everybody, right? I mean, Delly is a great fourth option. He's a really good, if you got into the advanced stats at all, Delly was like
over
top 40%
five. Catch and shoot player.
Exactly. Catch and shoot, he's phenomenal. But when you take him away from catch and shoot and you're trying to get him to go to the basket and become a bigger part of the offense, that's just not his game at a high level NBA performance type. You know, there were some things that had to be done in that regard, but you're right. I mean, look, it's okay for LeBron to make adjustments. It's okay for LeBron to call any audible that he wants. But at the end of the day, this base offense has to be the Princeton offense that David Blatt knows that can create opportunities for people away from the ball. And LeBron's a smart enough player. He'll understand the more opportunities you create away from the ball, the more space you're going to have with the ball, and the better shots you're going to be able to take.
And I tweeted this after one of the preseason games, and I truly believe that the best case scenario for the Cavs offense, and, you know, we'd never see it, but would be LeBron averages maybe 17 points, but leads the league in assists with 14 a game, and he's more than capable, and I think he'd win the MVP if he did that, honestly.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. No
question. But I don't think he would ever want to do that, which is sad because he's just so gifted as a passer.
No, look, until we win a title, Mike, this is his thing. He takes personal responsibility and accountability for it. And he, you know, to him, that translates in points, right? So I think he can be that player in Cleveland that you just talked about once we win a title. But until we win a title, he's going to try to take it all on his back.
Yeah, that might be true. I just, with the strength of the players around him, I just know he could be so good. And I mean, I understand, you know, he's not, it's like you don't look at him when he scores and think he's a gifted scorer. He's just that physically dominant over people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's incredible to watch.
And look, before people think that we're totally crazy and this is like a LeBron hate fest here, you know, the great part about this is we both come into this conversation knowing he's the best player on the planet. And this is a great problem to have. I mean, we're dissecting ways in which the greatest player on the planet can be more productive on this roster. And that's, you know, I mean, what other sport in Cleveland do we have that to talk about? So it's good to dive into it. Now, I do want to talk while we're on the Cavs real quick about defense because, you know, we talk about the offense and we talk about the flow of the game. And look, again, when the big three, when they're healthy, we were 30-3 in their last 33 games together and we were scoring at will. So I'm less concerned about the offense and what that's going to look like as I am about the defense. And, Mike, you and I have talked about this a lot personally, how LeBron, you know, he's a first-team All-NBA defender when he wants to be. The question is, how long is he going to want to be?
I don't know how bad he – I mean, the one comment he made this past year was after Tristan came in, I think – third in six man of the year votes, they asked him how hard is it for a big to win six man of the year, and he, in passive aggressive LeBron style, says about as hard it is for a wing to win defensive player of the year. And I'm thinking, just like, I watch your every single game not get back on defense because or think you don't get a foul call, so you get up slow and walk back, and as your teammates see it, they kind of follow your lead, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he has the physical tools to be so good and be the best perimeter defender in the league, which he doesn't need to be because we have Shumpert to take that role, so LeBron can spend more of his energy on offense, but man, if he can just, you know, play consistent good defense, it would just make the entire, it would just lift this team to a new level.
Let's focus away from him defensively too for a minute here. This is where, you know, I like the acquisition of a Sasha Kahn, and you know, look, I think Sasha Kahn's a 8 to 10 minute per game type of play. He's Kendrick Perkins, but just, you know, with some offensive
talent. Without making me cringe.
Yeah, exactly. He can, you know, he's Kendrick Perkins, who you actually want to be around the ball at times. So that's a good acquisition. Andy brings a ton in that regard, and with Tristan being out, I think Andy Varejao is going to have to be a ferocious rebounder like he has at times. But I still worry about our perimeter defense. I worry about our depth in terms of defending the perimeter, especially with Iman out. And I think this is the one downside of Kyrie being hurt. I thought Kyrie had taken huge, massive, giant steps. Yeah, he made giant strides, and all of a sudden, you know, he kind of is going to be set back, because you know when he comes back, there's that every player goes through it after a major injury, and Kyrie's had about 50 injuries in his career already. There's a period where he will really struggle in terms of his lateral quickness, in terms of his aggressiveness on defense, in terms of wanting to get into the lane and stop penetrating driving lanes. So I think that's going to be a real key, is number one, how quickly can he get back to defending at the level he did at the end of last year? And number two, who else? I mean, Mo Williams on the defensive end, okay. Dele can play defense, you know, but again, he's more of a liability. He can be a great spot-up guy on offense, but he's in to be that primary defender on the wing. I don't know if we got better. That's the one part of our team where, going from year one to year two of LeBron and Blatt, did we really get better in that regard? I don't know.
I think that we are, especially with more time with Mozgov under our belt, because he is an elite rim protector. You can funnel guys to him, and they will shoot a low percentage at the rim just because he's big and he's there and he's in the right spot.
That's true, yeah.
JR really showed me something on defense last year that I never thought he had. I was very impressed by the way he played. As the year went on, I thought Love wasn't a bad defender, and the one thing he does that I will always love a basketball player for doing, because it's just you're sacrificing yourself for the team, is he takes charges. That's his way of defending the rim, because he knows he's not explosive vertically. And as more time goes on, and I think he'll buy in more this year, if he's not getting subtweeted, and he's, you know, he was dealing with back issues last year, and I think that was, his numbers off of 2 days rest were incredible compared to one day or on a back-to-back. So I think with that, he's going to continue to grow on defense. I'm excited to see the energy of a lineup with both Matthew Dellavedova and Anderson Varejao.
Yeah,
I think they could be great together.
That'll be a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it's funny, the thing about Kevin Love, the year that he had last year, from a mental standpoint, to be able to go through a lot of the bullshit that LeBron put him through, and whether LeBron was doing it on purpose or not, I mean, that was just pure bullshit. And then a lot of the, on top of that, the national media, ESPN specifically, I mean, my God, how many
times... Well, they're not allowed to criticize LeBron there.
No, well, not only that, if you are even perceived to be against LeBron, or somebody that LeBron may not be, you know, getting along with, I mean, they were talking about at one point, oh, should the Cavs, you know, trade Kevin Love already, or, you know, because he's only got, and there's no way that he'll sign with Cleveland. He'll go to the Lakers before he signs with Cleveland. For Kevin Love to push through all of that mental bullshit and still play the way that he did, that is a huge testament to him. He's no doubt my favorite player on the team, and really because of that.
I would think their offense, when it was firing on all cylinders in that Boston series, that was a treat to watch.
Oh, no doubt.
I consider myself a basketball nerd, and from a basketball nerd's perspective, that was just like, it was almost Spursian, honestly.
It was.
I know this lineup will not be able to guard anyone, but how do you stop a lineup of Kyrie Irving, J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, LeBron James, and Kevin Love 1-5 when teams go small on you? There's no way to do it. No. They're that talented offensively.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. When these guys are healthy, and, mm-hmm. and not only, you know, you cycle that lineup out there, but then coming off the bench, you've got a shooter like Mo Williams, or, you know, you can toy around with the whole, if Tristan comes back, where you go ultra small, and, you know, Tristan's playing the five as the center, and you can work around him in that four out, one in set with just a ton of shooters and slashers in there. I think, you know, the good coaches say this all the time. Sometimes you play your best defense by playing really good offense.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand what that means, but that's exactly what that means. Those kinds of lineups are unstoppable. And yeah. even last year, in everybody's first year together, I think if we had that lineup going into the finals, and I've said this before, I think we win the championship. And I really don't think there's a question about that. And
so, I don't think we sweep them. I think it's probably a 6-game series, but I agree.
We win it. I mean,
I think we win it.
They don't. They and that's the thing. You know, they don't have the defensive. They killed us in the finals by going small. They killed us with it. And if they do that again against that healthy lineup, okay, fine. But we're just going to outscore you now.
Yeah.
And that's what the element that we didn't have last year. And that was, you know, also partially. And again, I don't want this to be a LeBron hate fest because we do like LeBron. And thanks for coming back, LeBron, by the way. But
yeah.
LeBron, I think, a lot of times hurt us in the sense that he wanted to play half-court showboat basketball where he could, you know, dribble it down to 1 second and then take a fadeaway jumper and try to make a highlight reel shot. Whereas if he would have led the charge in transition, which he really did in Game 3, by the way, when we won Game 3, we took the 2-1 lead and we're thinking, oh my God, we could actually do this. A lot of that was transition ball. And we beat their small lineup with transition. That wasn't the case the rest of the series. And so that transition aspect, in addition to the half court, with that kind of lineup, I think is unstoppable.
And we played Andrew Bogut off the floor, who was the third leading vote getter for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, yep.
Like, that's how, look, we lost the series and are complaining about some of the things that happened. We played that guy off the floor. The leading vote getter was Draymond Green, even though he didn't actually win the award, which I will never understand. And people really just downplay how great that Warriors team was, winning 67 games, being first in the league in defense, and points per game away from best offense in the league.
Well, and you talk about the flexibility of good coaching. I mean, that's Steve Kerr. I mean,
I'm a big Steve Kerr fan,
he was phenomenal. And the David Lee, you know, inserting David Lee out of the middle of nowhere into big minutes and doing the things that he had to do to win a title,
not
being afraid to bench Bogut. Just really good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, that will conclude the Cavs preview. And obviously, we've got a lot more Cavs talk to go even before the season and once we get into the season.
We'll be more positive about LeBron going forward.
Exactly. We will. And again, please, please, please do not tweet us and say, oh, we hate LeBron and we don't. You know, I love LeBron, okay? And
you can like someone and criticize them. The two aren't mutually exclusive.
Exactly. We criticize him out of love, right? Like, we want to see the. It's like, you know, a relationship. We're in a relationship with LeBron right now, okay? And we just want to get the best out of that relationship. That's all. We just, you know, we want a good partner. That's it.
Exactly.
And so we'll talk much more about the Cavs. And again, what a nice thing to not spend 40 minutes of our podcast just hammering the Browns and Mike Pettine and all the negatives. And that's more me than Mike Arnold has ever done.
Yeah.
But a good positive podcast. We hope you enjoyed. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Ken Carman. And again, I want to personally thank Ken for coming on and talking with me. He is, again, the best Cleveland sports radio guy that we've seen in a long time because he's fair. He likes to talk about relevancy. He's funny. And he cares. He's a fan just like all of us, and he doesn't resort to a lot of those cheap radio tricks that you hear some of the other guys do. So thank you to Ken for coming on. Mike, any parting words for episode 3?
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs. All right, that's it. For Mike Arnold, this is Adam Bennett. Join us next week. Same time, same place. This is the Hard Foul Cleveland Sports Podcast on HardFoulSports.com.